Welcome to another episode of Cosmos with Cosmos. I'm Liz.
I'm Mike.
I'm Brandon.
He's Brandon. I was matching Mike's energy there.
Well, it was... I don't know. Just go ahead. Go.
We've got to have the energy, you know, because...
I had the energy until you sucked it right out of the room.
Oh, well, I'm an energy vampire.
What's his face from?
Colin. You know what? We don't have time to discuss all these irrelevant things.
His name's Colin, but that's fine.
Because the show's about time. We're talking about time, not space time, but time time.
I mean,
a little space time. I mean, you can't talk about time without space time. But yeah. You know, it's just time. We're just delving into time. Yes, Colin Robinson. Thank you.
That's what I was saying.
So since we're talking about time, it's time for us to get into our drinks. So, Brandon, what are you drinking?
So my drink is called If I Could Turn Back Time.
I love it.
I'm just going to call it that because it is May 5th as we are doing the show. It is tequila, mezcal, fresh squeezed orange juice, cinnamon stick that's been slightly burned on the fire, dipped in there with some Pinot Noir sugar mixed up. And in this wonderful glass.
Ooh, nice.
It's apparently is my word, delightful.
It is your word. Delightful, elegant, and what's my word? It's like, anyways, or whatever.
Anyways? That's your word?
Essentially.
Essentially. Essentially. Is a good essentially. One? Essentially.
There's another word we were talking about before the show began. What word was that?
Mike, what are you drinking?
All right. I was going to call it the Hootie. Because it's the one band that I have seen more than any other band, only because I grew up in South Carolina.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
So they play local.
And they just play locally all the time. However, I did find a quote that I just absolutely love. And it ends up being a long name, but fuck it, I don't care. I'm calling it The Present, where the uncertainties of the future become the certainties of the past.
That's such a present of a quote.
And
is a present. It's delightful.
Yeah. But it has, what does it have in it? It has mandarin orange vodka, grand marnier, orange juice, and you top it off. Oh, it's got triple sec in it, I think. No, it doesn't. I was thinking of another drink.
You made it.
I did. But I also made two different drinks.
Yes.
It's an uncertain drink.
And it's this quantum drink, and it has sparkling water on top. So cheers, everybody. I have not tasted it. But
we'll taste it. Let's see. Let's see a live reaction of.
When I think of a quantum drink, I think it's blue. But anyway.
Let me get it.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay.
It's smoother than I thought it was gonna be.
Oh yeah.
In that it's not because the orange juice has potential being tart.
Yeah. It kind of it's nice.
It's mellow.
It's nice.
Good. Nice is good.
I enjoy it. I'm drinking what I'm called the Electroclepsidrolite.
Okay.
Which actually is kind of a misnomer because I have another drink that's actually Pedialyte. And this drink is actually from my childhood, from my middle school, high school years, which is actually a Jones soda. Bubblegum flavor, and I'm drinking these because I'm on some medication for my back that's killing me, and I don't want to interfere with my meds.
So you went with bubblegum?
So I wanted the bubblegum flavor.
I got you both blue.
Yeah, there was two blues. There was a berry flavor.
At the local grocery store, so many blue drinks.
Oh my god. Hold on, let me relive this moment back in time. It's been so long since I've had a Jones Soda bubblegum, and I never see it anywhere, and
I was just convinced somebody was going to say, you got a lot of blue drinks in your basket. But
there was two blue Powerades, the blue Pedialyte. I like blue drinks and the blue Jones soda.
Two different blue sodas.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's do this.
Yes. Okay. All right. Follow us on all the things, Drinking Cosmos on Twitter and Cosmos with Cosmos everywhere else. Of course, Spotify and right here on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts, like iTunes and all that good stuff. And check out some friends of ours, Katie Davison's wonderful art, Wild Ixia on Etsy, Wild IXIA.
See you later. Just have the same last name.
No
relation. Oh, wait a minute. Yours is Davidson.
Oh, how dare no. No, she's the best little sister anybody could ever have. So I nepotistically promote her stuff because she's amazing. She's your little sister. My little sister. Ron Proctor, MrProctorShow.com. He does some really cool stuff, and you can also find him on the social media somehow, and he does really neat things. And our good buddy Jack Northrop's Planetarium, Rolling Bluffs, Planetarium.com, if you're in the Council Bluffs area of Iowa, if you're hanging out in the Midwest with the corn and wheat, whatever's in the Midwest. Tornadoes, apparently. Tornadoes are hanging out in the Midwest recently.
Yeah, there was a bunch of tornadoes.
Oh, yeah. There was a coworker of mine had one touchdown like 5 miles from her house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah, Brandon knows tornadoes.
Jack can let us know, but it just seems like it's a little early for tornadoes. But, I don't know.
Just like anyway, it's a little late for snow, but here we are. There's snow coming down.
Anyway,
Shot. Also check out The Shot every other Wednesday. By the way, okay, just a little note. The Shot just came out about Peter Higgs and the Higgs boson. So check that out. However, we will have a Shot coming out in a couple weeks that is about time. Because we decided...
About time for what?
It's about time. In fact, it's mistimed the episode because I was supposed to put it up instead of the Higgs boson to be a precursor to this show, because when we did The Shot, we decided we needed a full episode about time. So if you want a more condensed version of this episode, then you can check out The Shot on time coming out in a couple weeks on a Wednesday. So I just am a dumb when scheduling it. Now, if you're listening to the show, watching the show, we got our fan Elizabeth waiting for this to happen. We got some rules. You hear a puppy bark. You hear Star Wars references. You hear Lord of the Rings references. And anytime someone's head explodes, apparently is a new special rule for this episode, take a drink.
Speaking of drinks, Brandon, I think we need to have you do an in memoriam for us. And we will suspend one of the rules for this.
Rule suspended. We have we just found out about this news.
Yeah, I was A, prepped, and now B, prepped for a memoriam. So I'll just say Bernard Hill, Captain of the Titanic, King Theoden, hail the victorious dead.
Cheers.
Cheers.
To Bernard Hill.
Oof. That's awful. That's a tough one.
That one hurts. Rough. Yeah, this one hurts.
Anyway, on that note, you know, time does not last for everybody.
No, and in fact, time just keeps on slipping.
It keeps on slipping. Keeps on going.
Mostly to the future, but sometimes backwards.
It gets a little wibbly wobbly, but we'll get there. So let's start off here with time, and I'm gonna bring my iPad a little bit closer to me so I'm not looking.
You've gotten old lately. Your eyes don't work.
Dude, my eyes, I can read it. It's just easier to have it right in front of me to scroll. I mean, the main thing is my back is just destroying me right now, but that's fine. I have a heating pad behind me right now.
Oh, that's the best feeling. Oh, can you get a Tems? Do you have a Tens? Have you had those before?
A what?
It's called a Tens. It's like a mat you put on your back, and it sends little electric vibrations to you, and it's excellent. It's excellent for bad backs.
Oh, no, I haven't. Okay, I'll have to look into that. But I'll do that another time.
Okay.
It's a good thing we don't have that as like a thing.
I should add that.
A special rule every time we make like a time.
I have a special rule and keep it to myself, and I'm seeing if you guys will figure it out by the end.
Oh gosh. Okay. So speaking of time, which is our whole podcast, you know, why do we have time? This concept of time, you know, early humans, you know, just living their lives, and somehow we've come up with time, and it boils down to time being like a measurement of age, of history, of basically just keeping track of shit.
Day-to-day shit.
Organizing our lives, organizing our history, you know, organizing just basically everything we know. Like animals, they don't keep track of time. right?
Oh no, Leia does.
Unless it's Leia.
They know it's weird because they know like when it gets close to feeding time. Like they have something, but they're not wearing watches. They're not.
Well, no, but
you know they don't have a
internally. They're keeping track.
Internally,
of it.
Somehow keeping track.
Well, it's of their time. Stomach.
But like, imagine not having any time or sense of time. Like there is no.
Oh,
when.
you mean like Mondays.
Yeah. Like there is no when. There's only like the how, why, and what.
Okay.
Can you imagine no when?
Well, it depends how you define the when, isn't it?
It would be time. It would be the when is a time, right?
This is going to be an episode.
All right, my brain hurts already, so take a drink, you know? Like that's for you, Elizabeth, so you can take a shot of that cinnamon coffee, Kahlua eggnog coffee scotch with sweet foam that you've got going on, which sounds really delicious. So, you know, in the history of time, you know, is how humans keep track of time. We made it up, right? We made it up. We made up time. It's a human construct. Time. Do you disagree?
Let's keep going.
No, conversation.
Oh, he's gonna love the end of the show.
I know. No, this is why I'm gonna hold off.
Okay.
Get into nitty gritty of it. I would just say, for example, time is just like a day of the revolution of the Earth turning on its axis. Day night. That in itself is a time that's not constructed. It exists. Regardless of human,
but we construct a time out of it. We construct a 24 hours.
Why don't we just wait?
Okay. Yes. Okay. There we go. Because right. we'll get. I'm assuming we'll get into this. I have not looked at the outline yet because I'm a good podcast co-host.
Yeah. All right. So records of artifacts indicate there's always someone who is kind of like obsessed with tracking time. Like there's always somebody throughout history. Oh, Brandon.
No, me.
You. Yeah, exactly. You.
There are whole careers built.
Yeah, there's careers built around time. Okay, so there's always been people that human beings that have been like, "I gotta figure out time." You know, just and I wonder how like they got to be very punctual. These people very punctual, yes. Right? Yeah. They're always on time.
I'm never late.
So let's go back in time a little bit. We love it. Okay, so the first timekeeping device, and still a timekeeping device, and a natural timekeeping device to this day, the sky!
Nailed it.
Yeah! Okay, tracking the apparent motion of planets, the sun, the moon, ancient civilizations, seafarers of old and even today.
I guess you can call them ancient mariners.
Ancient mariners.
Thank you.
I got you.
They have good rhymes.
They do.
They had good times.
You know, they
now I have Iron Maiden like going in my head.
People have always used the sky to track time because it's very consistent in the way that the sun appears to move throughout the sky and the planets and the stars, etc. It's a standard motion, like the Egyptians for example, I'm not even drinking alcohol.
They did exist.
The appearance of certain constellations in the sky signaled when the Nile would flood. So that tells them, you know, that they base their, you know, agricultural time frames around that, the harvesting and planting and all that good stuff. And so the only natural timekeeping device, it's not a device at all, is simply like human ingenuity and brain power that we realized that the sky can be used to keep track of things.
We're really smart.
We are smart. We're smart and real dumb at the same time, but you know, we're pretty smart. So as far as like the physical timekeeping devices, you know, things that humans have actually created for the purpose nice. Of tracking time, we actually can start with Neanderthals, which is surprising. So I found an article from nature.com, although I couldn't read the whole article because it was behind a paywall. So there's that. But it basically indicates that archaeological evidence has found areas, Neanderthals in different parts of the world have put notches on bones. That seem to signal that they were tracking certain things, using that to track time. So, like, Neanderthals in Western France made notches on hyena bone about 60,000 years ago. And then there was a baboon fibula in South Africa that had 29 notches that may have been used to record events.
I think that's a big, I'm sure this paywall had the reasoning behind it, but it seems like a big leap to say there are notches on this. They must have been counting days or keeping track of time when maybe some dude just, you know, made notches on the bone because he felt like it.
Well, yeah, but I'm sure that there were the scientists too.
I'll pause at the moment, but it's
Kind of funny. So, like, there's other
context.
There's other evidence that suggests Ice Age hunters in Europe over 20,000 years ago scratched lines and gouged holes in sticks and bones, possibly counting the days between the phases of the moon.
Oh, that's cool.
And that little tidbit actually comes from the National Institutes of Standards and Technology.
See, and that makes more sense because I'm sure, like, there's this obviously a set number of days between full and new moon. And if you say that repeatedly, then you can kind of count that.
Yeah. So there must have been,
but interestingly, 29 notches would also be that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Right. So, you know, there's evidence that suggests that these are related to time in some way. And it's probably that, you know, the number of notches and the fact that maybe the bones weren't used for anything else like a decorative jewelry or tools or something, that they specifically only had like this one function.
I want to know, do Neanderthals and these guys from 20,000 years ago, do they understand math? Clearly, they're counting things.
They're counting things, yeah. I mean, but I don't know.
Well, it depends how much math you want to define. I'm sure, like, well, if they think back days ago, they think about two notches ago, I'm sure they can think that.
Right, right. So I'm not thinking, like, calculus or anything like that. But
no, Newts gets that. But
have they started working out the language of math?
It's possible. It's rhetorical. Yeah, I know.
I have another thought bubble. What was it like when the first group, first person, what have you, first developed the whisper of math? You said the language of math, so it means it's going to be whisper ahead of it. Like, what was that like?
Maybe that's the notches of the bones and counting. I mean, because counting, that is math. Counting
is math, yes. But
you know.
Or do you think, like, when the person was getting those notches, he goes, huh, that's weird. If I had three more, I could see what might happen 3 days from now.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, exactly. I mean, but counting the notches is saying the words out loud. It's not the same as actually understanding the language that's underneath.
Oh, right. Yeah. I don't think it was probably maybe that
it was such a rhetorical question. Yeah.
But it's so fascinating.
Yeah. So.
You can't pose rhetorical questions.
I have a few rhetorical questions. And
that's one of them.
Apparently I have three, because there's two more later.
Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit, okay? to the ancient civilizations of, like, the Egyptians, Mesopotamians, Babylonians, and so forth.
Why it does not fit on the nest?
Big dogs like to lay in small cat beds. The ancient civilizations used, again, the sky, of course, as we already mentioned, but they did develop timekeeping devices that were used mainly for, like, religious and agricultural practices. Like, for example, sundials. I'm going to assume we've all heard of a sundial, right? And that is a device that is made usually like a stone or what have you.
Stick in the ground.
That is a stick in the ground.
I unironically want a sundial wristwatch. Not to actually wear all the time,
just once in a while, yeah. Break out your sundial wristwatch.
The number of questions you will get.
Like, what?
Stares and questions. A lot of stares, but then there'll be like the...
Well, it's not like a monolith on my wrist. It's an itty-bitty thing.
Yeah, you're trying to bring back the sundial, you know?
I think you ought to make it a monolith. But then,
a 16-ton brick of stone on my wrist.
Just like...
But if I had it, then I would do the whole southern thing. Oh, I had the vapors, and then I would
stab myself. But then you have to, like, go out into, like, the sun and be like, all right, it's... Let me look for that shadow. So using a device to basically track time by using the sun and the earth's shadow to tell you, okay, where you're at in the day, But that's not the only, if my notes scroll down, that's not the only kind of timekeep device used. The Egyptians, they developed a water clock called the clepsydra.
Oh, gosh. That's where you get your name from.
Yes, that's where I get my name from. And so the best I can gather about this water clock is it's like an hourglass type deal, but there's two vases of water and one below the other, and they measure the regulated flow of water from one vessel to the other below it.
It's a sand clock with water.
Sand clock. It's an hourglass, but with water. The Babylonians also had a water clock, and they used it to aid astronomical calculations. And what they did is they measure time by the weight of water flowing from it, the weight being called mana or mina. So I was trying to read how this thing, thing worked. And I really couldn't, like, I started writing out how it worked, but then I was like, I don't get it. There's something about using these to measure the day or like as a payment or something to the day and night watches. And then there's a complicated bit about adding certain amounts of mana during different times of the year or months to measure like these night watches or day watches.
Okay.
I don't know. It's weird. So it's like, it was like at the summer solstice, they would add 2 mana of water. And then every subsequent month, they'd add like a 1/3 mana of water. But on the equinox, then they would add 3 mana of water.
I mean, they have their magic bar is very full in those days.
Yes.
They have to remove
video games.
They have to remove some of this mana.
Yeah, well, it's like as it flows.
Oh, that's true.
You know, and then I don't know. It's very, very complicated. But also ancient India and China also had their own versions of water clocks they would use. After like the Egyptians had developed the clepsydra or whatever weird name it is.
Sure.
All right, so let's get a little more contemporary, I say.
Just a little.
The hourglass, so the actual hourglass using the sands of time, was invented in Europe.
Thinking of my grandmother's story.
It's the Prince of Persia, the sands
of
time.
I was thinking Prince of Persia,
But mechanical clock, so more of the clock type devices that we are familiar with in the present day, those were developed in medieval Europe. Comment in chat. It sounds like the Magic the Gathering card game. Exactly. So the first mechanical clocks that were developed were weight driven by a verge and foliot, which is basically just a gear train that's moving at a standard rate. And these were used for at least 300 years, these types of clocks. And in the 15th century, the first small clocks were developed once a main spring was invented and added to the clocks, some sort of like little spring that could be like a smaller than like a big like gear ticking away, if you will.
We've just struck an interest I didn't know I had
about clocks.
Yes.
I have a book. I forgot to go look for it earlier. That is about the invention of this certain type of clock that was used for navigation and keeping time during navigation. I totally forgot to look it up and grab it before the show. But maybe for the hangover, I'll go and grab it and find it, because I know I still have it. So following these gear clocks, then the pendulum clock comes around, but it was first actually kind of thought of, and drawings of it were made by our good friend Leonardo da Vinci.
Oh,
good friend
Leo.
Yeah, Leo. Good old Leo. You know, after Michelangelo brings the pizza in, he gets some motivation drawing up some pendulum clocks.
Nice.
I'm
more of a Donatello guy myself.
We got Donatello. So I'm a Raff guy, you know, my Raff. So then another fan of the show, good buddy, Galileo, good old Galileo Galilei, he discovered that the frequency for a pendulum clock, the frequency depended on the length of the pendulum and not the weight of the pendulum. And then the first actual pendulum clock that was designed and built was by...
Friend of the show.
Christian Huygens in 1656. Christian Huygens, if that name sounds familiar, there was a little satellite sent over to this planet Saturn called Cassini, but it had a little probe that dropped down to the surface called Huygens, named after this Christian Huygens here. So other various clocks were invented also around this time. There were striking clocks, repeating clocks. There's one I didn't write down here. It was called a deadbeat clock. It was like mechanism, but then I couldn't really understand it. So
it's always gone.
But then you get a more precise way to measure time by using quartz crystals. The quartz timer became the basis for the most precise measurement, similar to a Kyber crystal.
What? Nice. Oh, damn it. All right.
Yeah. There you go.
Also, so Liz might know this because she obviously did the research here. But Mike, what year did the quartz be put into a watch? What year do you think?
What year?
What year was the first quartz watch?
I didn't write that down.
Okay. What year do you think it is then? I don't know.
I'm gonna say 1847.
It's gonna be after 1656. Why didn't I write this down?
1847. We're gonna reveal this answer at the Hangover.
Quartz.
Liz, don't do it.
Make
a game out of this.
Okay. I'm making a game out of it. All right.
Yeah, you gotta give.
Okay. Let's see. I'm trying to remember.
1846.
Yeah, I'm gonna say. What did you say?
1847. Is that what I said?
Yeah, it is.
And what did you say, Brandon?
I haven't. I was asking the question first. I'm gonna say like. Oh, I want to say like 1902.
All right. What you got?
I'm gonna say like probably like I don't know.
You gotta like cut the
1710.
Holy Ooh. Shit!
I don't think it's too far.
Well, because it has to involve electricity, pendulum. Right?
No, you're just ringing. Well,
it is an electronic oscillator.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll find out at the end of the episode or the Hangover.
Okay.
He's
making a game out of it, so you can't.
I'm making a game.
Right, but I already made my guess.
Yeah.
Loser takes a drink.
You can't look it up.
All right. Anyway.
All right. Now, so we see this development of this progression of timekeeping devices from, you know, from water to then, you know, mechanical means. But the most accurate timekeeping device of all time, the atomic clock.
Hell yeah.
And the atomic clock is accurate to a few billionths of a second.
Did you know that the clock that keeps the track of time for the United States is located in Colorado? And
it is.
And I forget what rare metal it has, but the molecule of it, they can tell it turns at like 7.6 billion times per second.
Yeah, I wonder.
And it will be off by 1 second and 100 millimeters.
Yeah, they typically use cesium, but I'm not so sure that they're using.
I don't think it was cesium. It was something else.
It was something else.
Is it brutium?
I think it started with a G.
So what they do is excite it. They excite this atom.
How do they get it excited? Did they tell it it's going to go to Disneyland?
They hit it with electromagnetic radiation. Okay. So they hit it.
Same thing.
And then it moves into just another thing. And it radiates out. And so that's how they keep track of the time, which then goes to another room that gets broadcasted to the rest of the U.S. And that's why when we look at our cell phones and computers now, they're all on the same time. That's how we're all connected by Colorado. So if Colorado were to just implode or explode,
we'd be so screwed
with time.
What does this mean?
So we've gone through all this, these, you know, jumped through all these hoops to develop time, to be able to keep track of time, to measure time. And so this development of mechanical clocks, once we had that, that it was able to create a standardized time that could help facilitate travel, trade, communication around the world between everyone. And then you have the development of time zones. And the 0 point of the world's time is the meridian of the Greenwich Observatory. And that's only because the UK dominated maritime commerce and shit at that time. So they're like, we rule, so we start time.
And that's a deep rabbit hole we can go into if we want.
Yeah, no.
Right, but for the US, didn't the train?
Yes, the trains. Yes. The yes. trains. We needed time zones for the trains so that everybody was on the same schedule.
And fun fact about those is that if the train is going across country or across from like from Paris to Switzerland, the time on the train started and ended. So it was kept by the city of origin. So if you left Paris and went up to Zurich, you would stay Paris time the entire way until you get off the train.
Oh,
that's crazy.
You know, the thing is, like when I get on a plane, I immediately switch to whatever time is that of the place I'm going.
God, time has no meaning in that sense.
Yeah. And then I'm confused for the whole flight. But it's not true. Anyway.
All right. So, in addition to just this whole synchronization of the world and people and our travel and our communications and everything, it also developed this concept of punctuality. Of like being on time, the concept of like work hours, you know,
it's just a way of controlling people. That's all.
It's just the man bringing us down.
It's organization. It's organization and structure of you know human activity basically and interaction, and also culturally clocks became a status symbol. So there would be big ornate clocks developed to show, you know, to show your status, like, like Big Ben in the UK.
The bigger the clock, the more powerful the nation. We have to make the biggest clock out there.
Yeah, pretty much.
And this is like a man's thing. We get it.
Oh, yeah. Let's look at the shape of all clocks that are...
Let's just turn the moon into a big clock.
It's science.
We just need some hands and some.
I mean, technically, it is a big giant clock as well.
Well, yeah, it is. Well, it's a natural, you know, timekeeping device.
As the Neanderthals found out.
Yeah, you know, so like the concept of time and the way that us humans use time, that is what is like invented by humans. That's a human construct and a way again for us to organize our lives on a whole for the world. Liz, or
look at the chat.
Or what, Georgia O'Keeffe clocks.
That's hilarious to me.
Anyway, it's time itself. Time itself is not all about tracking hours of the day, but instead, it gets pretty wibbly and wobbly and timey-wimey and a little weird when you enter the realm of time and physics. So, on that note, take it away, fancy physics man.
All right. prepare your brains.
Well, all right. I do want to preface this.
Preface it.
Is that in physics, there isn't an established answer as to what time is. So, you know, there's whole questions.
Is that why scientists are always late? They're terrible time management people.
No punctuality. They
are. I mean, the reports come in late, the project's never on time.
I know, right? But, you know, largely, time as we know it is a construct created by humanity, and it doesn't exist the way that we think that it exists.
I have so many questions.
But let's start with a definition of time in physics. Okay. And so in physics, time is defined as the measure of a change in a physical quantity or a magnitude used to quantify the duration of an event. So, your velocity changes. And over a certain amount of time.
The triangle? Yeah. Triangle?
Yes. Triangle. That is, in physics, called an acceleration. And so you can use that acceleration to figure out forces and things like that. And so time is important in calculations in physics and that type of thing.
Okay, yes.
So this is one of those, I mentioned rhetorical questions. This is one of those rhetorical questions. All right, so remember, time is defined as a measure of a change in a physical quantity or magnitude used to quantify the duration of an event. Okay. Actually. So by that definition, if you're an electron.
Yeah. Hanging out. Doing okay. Electron things. Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm a photon, but that's a different, that's an inside joke. We'll talk about later.
Yeah. And you ignore the uncertainty principle in thermodynamics.
Oh yeah. Just, okay. Hey, let's just ignore some shit. Ignore let's ignore some important shit.
You're a rebel of an electron.
You do what you want. You don't follow the man.
If you're an electron and nothing changes in your state, did time pass? I realize that there's no answer to this. This is a rhetorical question. So remember, if time in physics is defined as the measure of a change in a physical quantity or the magnitude used to quantify the duration of an event, if you're an electron and ignoring those two crucial things, the uncertainty principle and thermodynamics, if nothing changes about your state, did time actually pass for you?
Have no time?
Two things. Number one, take a drink because my brain's breaking.
Yeah, I was getting ready for the button because I was like, I don't know.
And number two, so if you were just an electron hanging out by yourself, ignoring all of the physics, time probably doesn't pass for you, but it will pass for everything else in the known galaxy universe. So would time still technically move, even though it hasn't moved for you because it's moving for everything else?
Nothing has changed in your state.
No, not your state, but everyone else's state. So,
right. So this electron is not measuring the state of anything else. The electron is just sitting.
Okay.
Is the electron the portrait of Dorian Gray?
Nice.
So there's no answer to this. There's no. This is a rhetorical question, and you know it's just
this is a fuck with your brain question.
It popped in my head when I was writing that note. So let's just kind of move on.
This is a little insight into your brain thinkings.
Yeah. I should have made a bigger drink.
All right. So
that's why we come with multiples.
So let's think about this: space and time. Okay.
Okay.
We're going to separate them for right now.
Right.
In reality.
Nice.
In reality, that's not true.
Right. But all intents and purposes here and now, exactly. We are separating them.
This is here and now. Yes. Okay.
So let me ask you a question. Can you change your position?
What?
I mean, sometimes it hurts, but I mean.
True.
Okay.
So you can get up. You can move around.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And you can change your position through time as well by just standing.
Next question. Can you sit still?
No, it's not right now. Very squirmy.
Okay. Well,
again, physically, because now we got space time going on here.
No.
Okay. Can you sit still? Yes. Okay. Watch.
Right. You can move and you can sit still in space. Right. Your XYZ, your forward, back,
yes,
up, down, left, and right.
Yes, your energy importance of...
Right.
And then to take this another step forward, because you're moving upon the Earth, let's say you're off in some distant piece of space, not attached to a planet or gravity well, you're just hanging out.
Yeah,
you can just pause yourself.
Next question.
Pause yourself.
Final question with regards to this. Can you sit perfectly still in time?
Now, let's think about this for a second.
What?
And just break brains. So... to time? No, my brain's broken.
No, you can't. You can't do it, right?
But, well...
you can't do it. Your heartbeat.
What if...
For some of us.
You're aging.
Your cells are vibrating.
I was trying to think about the way of like going really fast around the really giant gravity well or something like that, but it gets even faster, so I'm just more confused.
Yeah, no, you can't sit perfectly still in time.
And this leads to my definition of time.
Okay.
Which is entropy, is my definition of time.
Okay, all right, that's fair. That's fair. We're going to get to that.
Uh-huh. Oh, shit. God damn it.
Should have read the outline.
All right. So let's, okay. So, I mean, that's just that's an interesting question to think about. Can you sit still in time? The answer is no. As you know, even though our little electron, hypothetically ignoring shit,
a little rebel,
our rebel electron rebel. Is rebel sitting tron? Perfectly still in uh-huh. time. Uh-huh. But anyway, so it time and space now it brings us to relativity. You can't.
Everything comes back to relativity.
Brandon, pay attention, man. Pay attention.
It's so exciting.
He's distracted by the snow. It's snowing where he is, and it's beautiful, and...
And I'm jealous. Anyway, so our first thoughts of relativity come from Galileo Galilei.
Galileo.
And Sir Isaac Newton.
Who also thought of how the pendulum has to work.
Yeah. So...
Look at that.
So back in the 1600s, they thought of time as universal. Mm-hmm. Sure. They talked in terms of timelines. You are...
Timelines. Remember making timelines in school where you had to, like, draw yes. out a different events yes. on and a little
so
poster?
That's how they thought. They okay. thought that time was the same, really, for everybody. Okay. It elapsed at the same speed time. For everybody. And it also only moved forward. Okay?
Okay.
We're gonna get to that.
Right. God, but, I would love to go back in time.
Jesus. But, I know, right?
So much.
So they thought in terms of timelines, uh-huh. like your school project where you had to make a timeline. Uh-huh. You're
so,
like,
so much fun.
This happened here. You put uh-huh. a little dot on a line, uh-huh. you know, oh, whatever.
Like, hey, I'll go grab my timeline of my life that I made in, like, elementary school that I have.
I mean, that's like a much. Really short timeline, right? You know, but for you, when you're in elementary school, there's, like, so many events on it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's insane.
And so that's how Galileo Newton thought about it.
Okay.
Right? Interesting. Okay, yeah.
Fast forward a few centuries, a little guy, he's not really so well known, but he comes about. His uh-huh. name is Albert something.
Oh, Albert yeah. Yeah, I think I've heard of him.
Einstein.
Okay,
Einstein.
Yeah, no, yeah, just...
Einschweiger.
Just
that's
a little
a
blip.
Right there.
Just a little footnote in, you know, history.
Yeah.
That guy.
And so he said, no.
Oh.
Time is relative. It's true. Not.
Man, this
you can't think rebel in tron. Terms of timelines. You have to think in terms of what are called world lines. And so
wait. World minds?
Lines.
Oh, I said world minds.
I mean, there are world minds all over, but yeah.
So when you talk about relativity, the way that we think of relativity uh-huh. today, which is kind of an Einstein relativity, mm-hmm. right? You have what are called light cones. And so what you'll see are two cones.
Yes.
One faces up. That is your future. One faces down.
Okay. That is your past.
That is your past. But the lines that define yes. that those mm-hmm. those cones mm-hmm. is measured by the speed of light.
Okay.
So anything that has happened to you or will happen to you in the future. Uh-huh. So anything that's happened to you in the past or in the future has to be between those lines defined by the speed of light.
Okay, this makes sense. You, that conclusion there wrapped it up for me. My brain's no longer broken. Thank you. I understand this now.
Oh, that's like, is that like the, that's like the it's like thing in Star Trek Discovery. They used when the episode, spoilers, they're jumping through time. And she brings up the cones. Yeah.
Right, so they
brought
up the cones. Those are world line cones. Mm-hmm. Those
and
are
your present's always in the center. It's always
in the center.
Those.
The present is in the center. It's on this what is called a hypersurface, but just think of it as a big flat plane between the two.
Okay.
And so
the Midwest.
And so that is your present uh-huh. and you know, all that kind of stuff. And so
yes.
Einstein thought of time as more like a river. It ebbs
no,
and flows.
No, we don't drink with Star Trek references. Just Star Wars.
I mean, yeah. I will.
We haven't added Star
I
Trek
mean,
as a...
feel free to take a drink.
Yeah, but take a drink whenever you want to take a drink. Just, dude, we gotta limit it to a little bit.
So, Einstein thought of time as more like a river with which ebbs and flows. And I'm assuming Brandon wrote this. Some say love is also a river.
The river of love.
I know I did.
Some say love, it is a river. No.
Oh.
Katie's got to come in strong to me here.
I actually
remember hearing that song. Yeah. So.
What is that? A dove? A bird?
Oh my God! All right, Katie, come on. You got to help me out if you're listening still. Continue on.
Anyway, so basically, time does not move at the same rate for everybody. Based on different circumstances, time changes. So yes, and so how you experience time is related to how fast you're moving, and also how much into a gravitational well you are.
Okay.
Brandon brought up.
Katie's occupied with potato right now.
All right. Anyway,
I feel like Adam would know that.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right. Anyway, Brandon brought up Colorado. Uh huh. Colorado is high up on the Colorado Plateau, which experiences time slightly different than somebody in LA.
And it's not just because of the weed.
What's that?
Not just because of the weed.
Not just because of the weed, because California has that too. And so if you are at sea level, the way that you experience time is slightly different from Colorado, which is setting the time for everybody. So Colorado, that Bureau of Standards that sets the time actually has to take everything into account. It has to take into account that it is higher in elevation.
Okay.
And its time is moving slightly different, ever so slightly.
7.6 billion per second.
Elizabeth asks, is that the same as Nepal? Well, Nepal's a high.
Yeah, Nepal is even higher up.
Yeah.
Same concept.
Even higher up.
Right.
That's why those monks live forever.
That's why the monks live forever.
I don't want to live forever. Sorry, we're just doing weird time songs this episode.
So in 1972, there was an experiment that actually proved this. And so,
duration of a minute depends on the side of the bathroom door you're on.
That is true.
That's a
that is the ultimate physics definition of
also
time.
Football time, like a football game. A football minute.
Really, the ending of any sports
minute. Yeah, sports minutes. Sports minutes are a lot longer than normal minutes.
It's fine.
You know, but also like watching rugby and soccer to go full time, or football for Federico.
Football.
That's for the rest of the world, actually. You know, you hit full time. So, like in rugby, you hit that 80-minute mark, and just keep playing.
Yeah. I just found out Salt Lake City has a professional rugby team.
Yeah.
I just found out about this.
Real or something?
Yeah, the Real.
No, that's the soccer team. The rugby team.
Oh.
Also, Liz's tongue is blue. The Warriors.
Is he?
It matches her shirt.
All right, anyway. Focus. 1972.
Okay. Yes.
Raphael and Keating actually put some atomic clocks onto a plane. They sent one east and one flying west.
Oh.
The one that was going east was 59 nanoseconds different from the one that stayed on the ground.
Okay.
It was faster.
Uh-huh.
And the other one was 273 nanoseconds going west.
But why was it different going west and east?
Because you also had to factor in speed.
Well, shouldn't they be flying at the same speed then?
No. But No. All right. So it's relative to the clock on the ground, right?
Uh-huh.
And so the clock on the ground is heading west to east because that is the way that the Earth rotates from west to east.
So it's going with the Earth's rotation.
So,
because it is on the Earth, yes.
Right. And so the plane that's going east is going with the Earth's rotation.
Right. So that means it's
it's moving
faster.
No, it's moving slower away from
because the clocks going also the same direction. They're going the same direction.
So
I got
the one that's
you.
Going
okay.
West,
all right. My brain is fixed.
Yes.
Get it now. Yeah. Look, you got to really dumb it down for me.
So it actually proved that Einstein's view of time and stuff.
I got this. I'm gonna respond.
Okay. The question in chat is: what would time on Earth on Voyager 1 be like relative to Earth? Warp 10.
Nothing matters. If you know warp 10, you know.
Well, for Voyager 1, it is moving. is moving fast relative to us, and because it's escaping, right? So it's escaping us. Also, okay. And so its time is moving slower relative to us.
But the solar system itself is moving through the Milky Way.
Right, so it's moving with the solar system.
Oh, okay. So
it's relative to Earth. Okay. That's why you have to say what it's relative to.
What it's relative to. That's why we're so mad at that poster that was put up
at the planetarium. Yes, I was just thinking
that. Yeah, where the poster said the Milky Way travels through space at like whatever speed it was. But then you were like, well, was it what relative to what? You need to have that qualifier in order to determine that.
If you ever get pulled over by a cop. And the cop says you're doing 120. You can say, "Well, relative to what, motherfucker?"
There's this great story of a professor being pulled over, and it was kind of a misty morning, and he got pulled over for speeding, and he took him to court and over this ticket and explained how lasers work in mist, and like, how do you know this? I invented this. Like, his whole study was on lasers going through mist, and he proved how the laser can accurately measure the speed he was traveling.
That's funny. That's great. Cops just like,
Yeah, right?
Also, if you do get pulled over, one of the more important things is that he shoot you straight on.
Or at an angle.
Or at an angle. Now, what you also need to remember is that...
Is
he shoots you at an angle...
Oh no!
That means that you're actually going faster than what he said. So, but if you kind of want to argue it from a science point of view without giving away a punchline, you might be able to. But I mean, it won't work.
I'm gonna just take a drink based off all this.
Where did your brain break?
Mm-mm.
What?
Me taking a drink is me not talking.
Oh.
All right. So, but when we look at time, time moves forward, right?
You can't stop it.
Yeah.
So
daily savings and fall back. We make time go backwards in the fall.
Right, but if you didn't, but again, that is a man-made concept.
Are we gods?
So whether you're looking at it from a perspective of Galileo or Newton or even Einstein, either way, that river of time continues to move forward. Right. The question is why? Why does it seem to move forward?
Because entropy, right?
Thermodynamics. Let us talk thermodynamics. 1820, dude named Carnot. He thought a lot about steam engines.
Oh, he's trained. I mean,
he was thinking a lot about it, and he helped develop the second law of thermodynamics. Along, Lord Kelvin and Rudolf Clausius was also involved, which says that everything in the universe tends to move forward, move from low to high entropy.
There you go, Brandon.
So happy. I'm validated.
Let's all celebrate with a drink for Brandon because he got
this. I'm getting real low.
Fundamentally, entropy is a number of different ways that you can arrange stuff you can't see, like air particles and stuff, to still get the exact same measurements you can see, like pressure and temperature. It's a measure of disorder in a system, in a closed system. So it is the reason why the second law of thermodynamics, and dogs, especially Aussies, are the reason why you can never keep your house clean.
Oh God, all the hairs.
Because you can clean your room perfectly. Uh-huh. And everything is in its place. Moving, everything is in its place.
Yeah, you're in a winter wonderland. We know.
I didn't realize how much it's still snowing. I looked to my left. I got super excited. Anyway, so dogs, entropy.
But it only just takes every time one I little sweep thing. The floor, yes.
There's more dog hair still.
A little mote of dust lands over here, right. And it makes your room now not perfectly clean.
Right.
Or ace of hair. Fall someplace,
right.
Or a sock magically shows up. Anyway,
just the dishes, never-ending dishes.
So at the Big Bang, there was a high level of uniformity of energy. There was no matter at that time. It was short. I mean, we're talking right after the Big Bang. So energy evenly distributed. Blah blah blah. the universe expands, the universe cools, that energy turns to mass, and then you start to have some of that mass clump together. So now we're going from this uniformity, mm-hmm. which is low entropy, is orderly universe.
And then we get
clicks forming. To now we're getting clumps of matter here and clumps of matter there. Mm-hmm. And so now it's slowly starting to become disorganized. And these clumps of matter clump even more because of gravity.
It's like a snowball effect.
Stars that are born, which then become galaxies, which then become galactic clusters and galactic superclusters.
You have collisions of galaxies. You have
supernova explosions. And so you're losing every second. You lose more of that order in the universe. So every second.
If it started from order and complete order, how did the one thing go slightly wrong to create this cascading effect?
Well, the universe is expanding, right? So it cools. And then what happens is you go from this uniformity of energy, and it cools to where you can then, that energy can then transform into matter because E equals MC squared, right? And so it can actually turn into matter. Think of matter as frozen energy in a way. So now you're getting matter and energy, and as soon as you get that first particle of matter, you've really introduced disorder in the universe.
It only takes one to disrupt the system.
The explanation of frozen matter explaining E equals MC squared is fantastic. I've never thought, like, energy is just frozen matter. That clicks with me.
But like with ice, which is frozen water, mm-hmm. you can go from one state to another. Mm-hmm. Of course, mm-hmm. we don't really want that to happen. Because it makes big booms here on Earth and in the sun, centers of stars.
I also keep going. I'm into this. Keep going.
All right. So in the 1920s, Sir Arthur Eddington called this universal movement from order to disorder time's arrow. So this
is also novel of my next science fiction.
So this is the first time that time's arrow has been introduced. And Eddington says, if we follow the arrow, we find more and more of the random elements in the state of the world, then the arrow is pointing towards the future. If the random elements decrease, the arrow points towards the past. And that was in Nature of the Physical World, 1928, I believe, was the year. That was the first time that time's arrow... And a lot of physicists like to use time's arrow now.
Elizabeth in the chat asks, if matter is frozen energy, would you describe climate change and the melting of icebergs as speeding up matter or slowing down?
That's not a brainwave.
I mean, the thing is you're talking that it's just going from one matter state to another matter state. Mm-hmm. So,
unequivocal there.
The Big Bang might be another reason. I mean, we already discussed it in terms of the second law of thermodynamics. But as the universe expands, it drags time with it. So thank you, Einstein. So space is expanding, mm-hmm. but space is not separated from time. So as space expands, time changes as well. Which interestingly enough brings up another question.
Yes.
Also without an answer, none is to be expected. It's a rhetorical question.
Okay, I got it. Okay, I got all it. Right.
I have a certain thought on this, but if the universe contracts, does time run backwards?
Well, yes and no.
I'm going to say no. The answer. I'm going to say no on that.
I'm going to say no because this is a new event happening.
Like human consciousness would still perceive it as moving forward.
Yeah, because, you know, Einstein's coming back to life or anything.
But
going back in time.
Nobel Prize, please.
But in terms of the Big Bang being responsible for why time's arrow points the way that it does, and it expanding is the universe expanding is the reason why time always moves forward. Mm-hmm. If you now turn around and contract, space and time is going the other way.
What if dark energy is the keeper of time?
I mean, that's a good question. I'm not sure how, but
I don't know how either. I'm sure it's a stupid thing to say, but you know.
All right. So those might be two ways in which. I mean, the thing is, though, for physicists, though, time is looking more like an illusion, and yeah, so it's
something
not
we made up.
It is a human-made construct that is used to control commerce, control when you wake up and go to work, when kids wake up,
events,
go to school,
count how old you are, you know, used to know
when you can start getting, you know, benefits and stuff like that, you know, for being old.
AARP.
What's that? AARP stuff. Yeah. So it is looking more like it might be an illusion. I'm going to tell you, the punchline is we don't know. From a physics point of view, fundamentally, we don't know what time is. We don't understand time. We can put time in our equations, which tell us how a system might evolve, fundamentally, we don't know what it is. And so we understand gravity, the least understood force, better than we understand time.
Right.
Which then
brings another rhetorical question to mind is like, how would, say, an alien species, intelligent alien species, you know, 500 light years plus away, or whatever, you know, perceive time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so
it's our perception. It's a perception of time. Yeah. That's what we have.
There are two main pillars in physics.
Uh-huh.
Quantum physics.
Uh-huh.
And general theory of relativity.
Right. So the wacky and the uniform.
So quantum physics explains the small universe. You know, general theory of relativity explains, you know, the macro, the gravity, and all that kind of stuff. Classical physics, which is the whole Newton thing.
Yeah.
Togas.
That's just an easy way. I mean, it's basically it's just quantum physics that gets.
It's your basic physics.
But your guilty. Two pillars really are quantum physics and general theory of relativity. Right. They are considered to be time symmetric, which means that the physics they describe are the same whether time increases or decreases, whether time goes forward or backwards.
Okay, so those quarks are just
they don't care.
The same thing as everybody else.
It doesn't care.
Yeah.
So
they got muons to bother. They don't got time for that shit.
Exactly. Now, let's talk a little about gravity and time. I do think that, like, when we actually get to the hangover, we talk about is time travel possible, which brings in special theory of relativity. Black holes. So if space, if time has an arrow, so you're approaching the black hole.
Yes, going in.
Exactly.
Don't do it. Don't
so
it.
Time has the arrow. It points forward, right? But the moment you cross that event horizon, space has the arrow. The arrow flips to space. And the space arrow points forward because all your lines end at the singularity. There is no way to escape singularity. The arrow now goes from time. Time becomes meaningless when you pass through that event horizon. In fact, if you are outside the event horizon and you're watching somebody fall into it, they appear to just freeze at the event horizon. Time stands still for them. Now, they have passed through. They don't stand still. They literally pass through. But All futures point to the singularity.
All roads lead to Rome. All futures point to the singularity.
All your space time arrows point to the singularity. You can't avoid it.
I was muted. I took a drink for brain breaking reasons.
Yeah. I'm gonna do a brain break because just the mention of black holes, my brain starts to break.
Well, as Mike would say, black holes are very simple objects.
I mean, yeah.
They are the simplest objects in the universe. You just need gravity, so you just need mass to explain them, electric charge, and spin. You need three numbers.
Yes. Recipe for a black hole.
What's that?
Recipe for a black hole.
Oh, that's also the name of my new post-punk rock album.
Recipe for a black hole.
A black hole.
That's a good one.
That would be a cool like science book, like space book would be like astronomy recipes, and it's just like explanations of these concepts in like recipe
form.
And
every single one starts with you first need a universe.
Yeah.
So, by the way, the equation that describes a black hole with those three numbers is called the Kerr-Newman metric.
Kerr-Newman metric.
Yeah. From two astronomers in the 60s.
Named Kerr and Newman?
Yep, Kerr and Newman.
You're so smart.
All right, so the universe is expanding from the Big Bang. That expansion is stretching time, causing time to slow down. Uh-huh. And here's an example. So there are two identical stars that explode.
Okay.
One is really close to you, but one is really far away.
Okay.
Like, shortly after the beginning, right?
Wow.
So we're watching like really far away.
All right,
and what we're doing is we're watching the light curve of this supernova explosion. So we see it go boom, it brightens really quickly, and then it slowly fades.
Yeah.
And so we want to measure how long it's fading. And so the one that's closest to us, one that's just right next door to us, but not too close. We don't want to
not too close to also kill us with the
important to note
cosmic rays.
Yeah, so we see that it goes from really bright to really dim over 10 days.
Okay.
So, but the very distant star that we're watching, let's say it takes 30 days for it to go from really bright to really dim as well, and so. Did that star explode more slowly, or are we? Or is time ticking more slowly from a certain point of view? Very Star Wars reference there.
There you go,
Obi-Wan.
No. From a certain point of view is. I'm going to say that's not necessarily a Star Wars reference. Okay, fine.
It is in me.
Only because I'm running.
You just want to save your drink.
I do.
We just watched Rogue One and a new Hope yesterday. Nice.
All right. So the explosion didn't happen more slowly. It's just that we're further away.
So it takes more time
away from us. And so we're seeing time tick slowly there. It doesn't mean that it's exploding differently. It's not. The physics is the same. If we were there, that star would have gone from bright to dim over 10 days. So, interestingly enough, many billions of years in the future, the entropy, energy, matter might be such that the universe might be in a state where everything is evenly distributed, and time has no arrow. It's meaningless. Time has no meaning then at the end of all things.
Take a
breath.
Lower the rings.
I guess. Okay.
But I do want to say.
But okay, in that situation, if we're still hanging around, like we're still like aging and shit, we're still experiencing time in our own perception of time because we're like, I still have birthdays
because systems change
because of entropy.
Systems do change. You know, your cells, I mean, your atoms still vibrate.
Yes.
Your cells still reproduce, but there's still little errors in the reproduction of the DNA. So, yeah, I mean, things do change. It doesn't mean that time necessarily is a fundamental nature of the universe. And what I really want to say again, though, is from a physics point of view. The punchline is right now, from a physics point of view, we don't really understand time at a fundamental level. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that it's going to necessarily be written out of equations. Mm-hmm. It might not. It just means that right now, we don't understand fundamentally what time is.
And I have finally found a flaw in my thinking as far as entropy being a definition of time. That would still make time dependent on another subject. We still cannot define what time itself is. So I'm confused. My brain's breaking.
But I'm also remember, entropy is the tendency, which means that 99.9 and a bunch of nines percent of the time, the egg falls off the table and breaks.
Uh-huh.
But it's just that one time.
Yeah, fucking quantum.
Where the egg shoots off the floor reconnects and places
Humpty
itself.
Humpty Dumpty, put back together again.
Yes.
By quantum.
By quantum.
Fuck quantum. All right, I have two quotes here.
I got you.
To end it. Lee Smolin, who is really trying to understand time from a physics point of view, talking about the future, past, and all that kind of stuff. The future is not now real, and there could be no definite facts of the matter about the future.
Well, it hasn't happened.
What is real is the process by which future events are generated by our present events. So the future... Oh, it gets crazy. He says, basically, that right now, you just have the present. That's all that we have.
Yeah.
That is all that we ever have,
mm-hmm.
is the present.
Mm-hmm.
The past
is
not real anymore.
The present?
The past is not real, and the future is not real. The future, the past has already happened.
But it's still...
Hold on. From a physics point of view,
okay.
The past has happened. It cannot make any more changes to the universe. It has already happened. It cannot affect the universe in any kind of way.
Yep.
We remember it. We try to draw lessons from the past.
Okay. Yeah.
We remember it only because our brains and shit that happens in our brains.
Yeah.
So we remember the past.
It doesn't exist anymore. It's not happening anymore.
But from my point of view,
the beginning of this podcast no longer exists.
Exactly. One second ago, no longer exists.
God, I can't.
Wince when your back hurt a second ago no longer exists. All you have right now is the present. But the future doesn't exist either. The future is
unknown. It's a whole thing of possibilities. Frontier.
The future is this whole thing of possibilities.
The potential.
You can go this way, or you can go that way. You can do this or that.
So,
but it's all based on what is happening right now. You know?
Yeah.
And so the conditions that are happening right now,
uh-huh.
will determine what happens in the future. But the future is not set. It's not even real. It hasn't happened yet.
It is real because it will happen.
No.
It's guaranteed to happen, right?
No,
is the future... Mike, is the future guaranteed to happen?
Apparently not.
The future... Okay, so if the future is defined by a certain event happening, no, it's not guaranteed. The universe, it'll be
I guess one second from now.
You
have to live in the present. I'm gonna go play in the snow after this, just to live in the present.
I gotta tell you, this whole live in the present right is such a Buddhist thing. It is such a Buddhist thing. Anyway, final quote: Einstein. He wrote a letter. This is 1955. Wrote a letter to a dear friend of his family, Michel Besso. Michel Besso was with Einstein from the beginning. Einstein referred to him as the best physics soundboard anybody could have, where he would just throw a bunch of ideas to him. So Michel Besso has died.
Oh.
Yes. And Einstein writes a letter to his family. Now he has departed this strange world a little ahead of me. Einstein knew he was dying, so he was going to die later on.
We all know we're dying.
That signifies nothing. For us believing physicists, the distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion. The past does not exist. The future does not exist. The future is what you make it, which is fine.
The future is what you make. Live in the present.
But you gotta live in the present. You gotta live in the present. Because what you do now, what you do now is gonna define the present. And
these are all little like you know, those quotes.
Yes.
On the wall. Yes. In the bathroom.
And so I'm happy to end that podcast on that very fantastic quote. And I can say my thanks for the hangover because that was a very good quote to end on.
All right. So thanks for joining us. I know it went long, but what is time anyway?
What is time? We're in the present. What is time? We're in the present. In fact, you know, everything that's happened
doesn't
exist anymore.
Doesn't exist from a physics point of view. you know, join us in 2 weeks. It's going to be a high in the sky
June. Oh my God. June. I can't believe it's amazing how time works.
Should we? All right. Yeah, I don't know. All right. Join us in 2 weeks. Whatever.
Or whatever. We'll
follow us on all the things, obviously. And, you know, check out our time shot episode, which
that'll
will
come out. The Wednesday.
Oh shit! Sorry. Time's Arrow. That's a Next Generation episode name.
That's it is. Right. That's why that's it's what familiar. It was. I was it like, just what hit is me. That?
Yeah. Anyway, watch that episode.
Watch Time's Arrow. Star Trek Next Generation.
It's a two-parter. It's a two-parter.
Is that the flute? Is that the flute one?
No. It's the one where he goes back to time to see Mark Twain, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's the first one. It's a two-parter. Yeah.
The crystals in the basement.
Yes, and then watch the Lower Decks episode that referenced.
Spoilers, everybody. But, anyway, I mean, to be honest, you have had 30 years to watch that episode. Anyway, follow us on all things. Check us out. If you're still with us, whatever it is, join us for the hangover.
God bless you.
Cheers, everybody. Live in a moment.